Maggie, Lisa Brooks. Great to have you on board here. Andrew, you seen Tom anywhere? Because I don't want to press this button. He's not going to be there.
I mean, I saw him...
Earlier.
But
in the men's room again, reading birthdays. Oh, hey, Tom, whose birthday is it today?
Birthday. It's got to be somebody's. No, not till tomorrow.
Really? Whose birthday is tomorrow?
I can't remember, but it's February 14th.
That is one of the beauties Valentine's. Of having a large prostate in an interrupted stream like you do. You get a chance to really memorize all those birthdays. It is weird that that's where they put it.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're like, oh, somebody's celebrating 25 years. Let's congratulate them while I pull my fly up.
That's right.
Things are wrong. Well, what time is it, Andrew?
Time for you to apologize.
I think it's too late. I already said something to offend somebody. All right, let's get started. Tired of cold muffins for breakfast. People that have broken the law and now serving time for committing crimes against their fellow citizens at a Washington State prison are protesting. Are they on a hunger strike now, Tom?
I think so. They started February 1st. They are skipping certain meals, like maybe lunch or dinner.
Uh-huh.
It's in protest of something that the state has acknowledged they probably should get back to, which is proper nutrition. There was a Jay Inslee proclamation that said that we need to restore healthy nutrition to our prisons.
Uh-huh.
And this had been an earlier move to save money to give people cold breakfasts. And they say that this is part of the protest. They've been complaining. Now, this decree went out like 5 years ago, and they still haven't acted on it.
Uh-huh.
So
on the sympathy scale, 1 to 10, where is this? Negative 400 or negative 300? The average person, sympathy for the guys that have to eat cold muffins.
Well, I can't speak for the average person.
Okay.
I can only speak for myself.
All right, let's go to an average person. Andrew?
Oh, I'm average. Great.
On a scale of...
That's a step up for you, Andrew.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how sympathetic are you for guys that are in prison having to eat cold muffins?
0.
There we go. Fine. Thank you. Where are you on that one, Tom? Because you are the anomaly.
Well, I mean, I am sympathetic to them. I think it would be nice if they got healthy meals. Remember, there are two purposes.
How are you defining healthy meals?
Well, I mean, however nutrition is determined. That was what this decree that went out indicated, that it was not healthy for the clients. Now, I know you think you're in prison, you're supposed to be punished. But once you're in prison,
it's what's called
you can
punishment.
Be taken care of. Yes. Yeah. No, but the imprisonment should be the punishment. If not, we could give them 30 lashes a month.
There's a wide range.
That's right. That's right.
So Turkish prison. We've all seen those movies.
Yes.
Okay. And then or Mexican prisons. Yes. Or a Colombian prison, right? We're coming down a Chinese prison, right? Or some other place.
Yes.
And then what do you get? Should they get cable? Should they have cable? Yes. And this is it.
I don't know. Yes.
Right?
I mean, that's one of those issues. And now, but remember, I said there were two issues. The second issue, besides nutrition, besides health issues, is whether it is good for the population's stress levels. And right now they say that food, unlike other things like maybe cable TV or whatever, food is one of the things that lead to riots, that lead to strikes, that lead to a kind of difficult atmosphere in the prison. So if you just, on a very practical level, let's say, yeah, you think those guys ought to be punished as much as possible and screw them, I don't care about them. The idea is if it's good for the overall running of the prison,
well, I'm sure,
and the prison wardens and all of that, then that may be the best way to tamp down any kind of upset so you don't have something as extreme as a riot.
Well, it would keep everybody just as happy and peaceful if you let everybody get high and smoke as much pot as they wanted in prison too, right?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know.
Sure.
What if you don't want it? I mean, imagine the smoking. If you do not want to be high, it's just like
just saying,
cigarettes. You can't smoke in prison anymore, can you? Cigarettes? Because it's
I assume
healthy.
What are you looking at me for? Andrew, can you still smoke in prison?
I thought they were healthy.
Some guy sued saying, hey, it's unhealthy for me because they have like smoking and non-smoking.
So anyway.
Just one more way for you to feel even worse as a smoker. Even those guys are sent out to some other place.
But for instance, is he waving his hand for what something?
I found the information there.
Yes. What is the answer?
It says here that 24 states prohibit indoor smoking.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
And four states prohibit on all grounds, California, Nebraska, Arkansas, Kentucky.
Okay. Thank you. That's more than enough.
Okay. So that's good. But for instance, we are serving our inmates powdered milk.
Uh-huh.
And one of the big advances that is being proposed is that they get liquid milk, which I thought, liquid milk? Why would you qualify it as liquid milk until I realized they're having powdered milk?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anyway, so this is something that's afoot. It is worked into the governor's proposed budget,
mm-hmm.
so we should be able to pay for it. And, you know, now there are their considerations to do this. Yeah. It's not a big push against them, but because it's been so slow in coming, they are going on, you know, like food strike.
Food strike. Can improving prison food help rehabilitate convicts so they don't reoffend? 20 prisons and organizations around the world are finding out. I'll wait for details on that one.
But they've also, you know, they've eliminated, so in order to improve nutrition, this is a serious thing in prisons. Mm-hmm. They've eliminated deep fryers. They cut the number of fatty foods. They boosted offerings like fish and whole grains and vegetables. I mean, so they are, what they're trying to do is they're trying to improve the quality of the food.
Right.
And a lot of people, I can understand that, may see that as pampering, uh-huh. but I think that it serves a double purpose, health and quelling kind of
keeping everybody
prison upset.
Sedated, right. Yeah. There was the, I think it was in Arizona, that crazy guy that said, hey, we're going to take away weights from you. We're not going to let you have a weight room anymore. Why yeah. should we send you to prison? You sit around and watch cable and look at Playboy magazines, then you go out in the out in the yard and lift weights for 3 hours. You get huge. You come out of prison. You beat the hell out of people. Why are we creating these types of monsters? Right? I think it took it away. And then they sued. They wanted it back. I can't remember where that ended up.
Yeah.
Go on strike for something other than muffins. That's what I say. Hey, Trump is not happy with the border deal, and he says he may not sign it, right? Isn't this the latest?
Well, I don't know what you mean by the latest. So when he initially, yesterday when this first broke, he said, yeah, I don't really like the deal. I'm not big on it, but I don't think there's going to be a shutdown. Then like 3 hours later or 2 hours later, because it was during our show, he said, well, you know, maybe I will. And the markets went up and then they crashed.
Right.
I thought the latest was that he was probably going to sign it. Okay. Is there something new now?
What's the latest on it? Mitch McConnell urged Trump to sign it.
As Chairman Shelby pointed out, they've reached an agreement. They now have to put it on paper. We have to see if that reflects the principles. And we're hopeful the president will, once he does that and once we do that, we'll conclude that it's a good idea to sign it.
I think he gets even less money in this one, doesn't he? Didn't they offer him 1.5 or 1.3?
1.6 in December, and he rejected it because the conservatives jumped up and down. He ended up getting less money for it. Okay. And conservatives are yammering that that's not good. But I saw Sean Hannity, the main cheerleader for Trump, who called it a garbage compromise on Monday, has now said, well, okay, maybe we'll take it, and then he can figure out some other way to get the money.
Here's crying Chuck.
We have a bipartisan agreement. As in all bipartisan agreements, everybody had to give something.
They always say that's the most dangerous word in Washington, D.C.
What's that?
Bipartisan.
We are urging the president to sign it. The president should not make the same mistake he made a couple of months ago when there was a bipartisan agreement and he wouldn't sign it and caused the shutdown. Please, Mr. President, no one got everything they wanted in this bill, but sign it and don't cause a shutdown.
There you go. Support for the border wall is the highest it's ever been. It's at 47%.
I don't know.
Up from 37%.
I don't know what who did that poll and what was the question?
Are you in support of the border wall? Rand Paul says he's got an idea. He's been kicking this around for a while now. He says,
this bill would continue funding for agencies, programs, and activities not funded by the start of the fiscal year.
What he's saying is, stop doing this kooky stuff where both sides or who wants to do it, shut the entire government down. Let's not allow people to have that option anymore.
But minus 1%. So spending would go on, but we'd simply spend 99% of what we spent last year. And every 90 days, if the Congress fails to pass appropriations bills, we'd reduce it by 1% more. That would be the hammer that would force Congress to do its job. So we would automatically keep spending money, but we would spend 1% less. It would also provide more certainty to federal agencies who are, at worst case scenario, would always have a full year of money at no less than 96% of their current funding level.
Okay, because often most of these programs go up 3, 4, 7, 10, 14%. They increase. People say, oh, they're slashing the budget. No, they're just slowing down the amount that they're increasing. He has suggested, so the sort of the stick on this carrot and stick situation would be that we're going to reduce it 1% every year. But he's right. Take it off. Don't let people do that option anymore and make people keep people at the negotiating tables because it's too disruptive.
I don't know if we need this particular legislation, but I would have no problem. They just said, yes, you cannot do a government shutdown over a political dispute.
But then the question is that then how do you continue with funding? So you'd need the bill in place as a mechanism to continue to fund the behemoth of the government. Right. Because right now it says that if you don't pass the budget and you don't have it in place and you haven't established how to fund, everything stops. There's no money. He's saying, no, let it keep coming out. He's putting this thing in place. It would be you can keep funding the government, but you just have to make some small cut in the thing.
The problem is, I think that if he that doesn't seem quite as draconian enough to act, to get people to the table. If you're only cutting 1%, I think it's every 9 months.
That would be horrible. Rioting in the streets, Tom. Come on now.
Yeah, you wish.
Chuck E. Cheese has got a little bit of a problem. I didn't realize this controversy has been around as long as it has, but millions of people have tuned in to YouTube to watch it. And the are you a fan of Chuck E. Cheese?
I've been there once, maybe twice with my kids. Who remembers the pizza?
I said to say, it's a bold move to have your mascot be a rat.
Rats love pizza, as we know, in the New York Subway shot.
Yes, they do. So here's the theory going around. This is a YouTuber named Shane explains his theory about the Chuck E. Cheese pizza.
There's a theory that if somebody at Chuck E. Cheese doesn't finish their whole pizza, and there's like a few pieces left, the employee will take that to the back, take those pieces off the tray, and form a new pizza with all the other leftovers, and then reheat it and serve it to a new customer.
Now, why is he trying to explain
this? Hilarious.
What's the problem with the Chuck E. Cheese pizza?
So, again, you need visuals for this, but the idea is that they seem to be misshapen pizzas. They're never perfectly round, and there's some sizes are big and some sizes kind of small.
Yeah.
And sure, they're enough to fill a circle, but you would fail it if your job was to draw a perfect circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like always, it feels mismatched.
Yes.
And so the theory is, why? Why would that possibly be? And then that's the solution right there. He said, well, the reason it looks so weird is because they go around and you have to have 12 pieces to every pizza.
Right.
So you gather a bunch of random
why not?
Pizzas.
What's wrong with leftovers?
You stick them together. Well,
Let me say something. I was at a restaurant once.
Yes.
And I watched these people order very expensive sushi. It was in Park City. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I watched them eat. I'm eating my sushi. They got up and left.
Yeah.
Okay. So now it's sitting there. And I said.
Yeah.
I said to the two people, I'm going to go over there and get that sashimi. And they said, they left it on the table. I said, I know they did. And that's perfectly good sashimi. Yeah. I like saying the word sashimi.
I guess
so. And I went over and I took the sashimi.
Yeah. And that's fine if you do it on your own. But if a restaurant did that, I mean, first off, there are health violations, I'm sure, wazoo, that would get you in trouble. But I know it is tempting.
Health violations the other day. At Chuck E. Cheese, Tom. An oxymoron. Here's more.
Every piece is a different size.
Yes.
That piece is longer than that piece, which is shorter than that piece. These pieces in the back are shorter than those pieces.
Is he back in the kitchen at Chuck E. Cheese doing this?
He's like Google image searching.
The pepperonis.
Oh, man.
Line up. It's not just this picture. It's almost every picture you find of Chuck E. Cheese pizza. And nobody's talking about it. So I noticed this when I was like 8 years old or something.
Okay. He says
he's now 30, by the way. Yeah. This tells you how long.
And it was always like.
This is when he's growing up, you notice it too.
Yeah.
Displaced pizzas.
Really? That's disgusting. Like every time you went, it was just like a collection of random pieces of pizza.
Oh, yeah. One time there was like one veggie one.
I feel like I'm down in the basement with Andrew and his friends listening to this story. We used to take our kids there all the time. And Rye had an enormous bathroom incident.
Wow.
And he did it. I'm proud of him because he said, no, I'll be okay. I'm going in. I didn't have to go in with him. This was like, and he went in, he came out, he said, wow. I mean, it was bad, 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 right? Bad.
For him,
I mean, he said it was
just the bathroom
scary, the amount that came out of him because of what he had just eaten.
I see, okay.
And then he said, I think I deserve some tickets for that. Because they get you tickets.
Yeah that's so right. A bunch of useless raffle tickets.
The toilet would dispense tickets depending your sudden and uncontrollable explosive diarrhea.
Unfortunately, we're having a lot of fun with this story, but it's all we're doing is perpetuating an urban myth.
Wait a minute.
It's really unfair to Chuck E.
Cheese.
Well,
then how do they explain it? Have they said anything?
Yes, they have.
They say what happens is the pizzas get left on the table, and then the rats at the restaurant, they eat some of them.
They just bring it in. Well, they claim that every pizza is individually made, obviously, on the premises, and so that's the nature of the business, that when you're making the dough, it's never going to be perfectly symmetrical.
Yeah.
The second thing is, and this is the most logical explanation, they said somebody who used to work there said, listen, Chuck E. Cheese kitchen people, they're just always in a hurry. They're kind of lazy or sloppy or whatever. He says, what they do is they just start cutting up the pizza and they realize, oh, crap, there are only 10 pieces here. I need to get 12 pieces out of it. And so then they just take like two of the bigger pieces and they slice a couple of more pieces and cram them in. So it really is just an effort at trying to work fast and maybe sloppily and they're not that concerned about the look of it. And so that's how it most likely happens. But I love this theory.
I don't believe that.
You don't.
No, because what happens is any job you get, especially something like that, you learn how to do it efficiently. Bang, 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 and you have the thing cut out.
Yeah, but that's assuming that the Chuck E. Cheese employees are there for longer than 2 weeks, and there may be a lot of turnover. Who knows? But the idea is that Chuck E. Cheese is a national chain. They would not be able to get away with this if this was a company policy. It would eventually leak out. Health violations would have shut them down.
Well, they should send them to West Point, because at West Point, you learn how to cut the pie. Have you ever heard this story?
No.
So the plebes, which are the first year guys that are sitting there, they sit at a table, and then the upperclassmen can say, come cut my pie. So what happens is they say, I want 11 slices, and they all have to be exactly the same. So a plebe will put in his hat a piece of paper that has the inches of each cut needing to get to 11 or 9. Give me 9 pieces in this pie. So the guys look down and like, okay, so then that means each one has to be 2.5 inches around the diameter of the pie in order for me to get 11 or 9 slices out of it. Good Lord.
They take time at West Point to teach pie cutting. Wow.
We need to get more West Point grads back there in the kitchen at Chuck E. Cheese to solve all this problem. Yeah, that's...
Don't get grease on your uniform.
No way. Let's see. We're going to get to stories, including the fact that if you ever use Google Maps rather than on a bike or in a car... and you happen to walk, you can always tell when someone's using a Google map and they're standing on the sidewalk.
Yes.
They look like they've just seen the coming of the Virgin Mary. There's an odd look on their face. They seem both mystified, confused, and amazed all at the same time.
And it's going to get even better.
What do you mean? Better?
Better.
It's going to solve the problem.
They're working on something that's even better than the way it stands now.
Perfect.
And not only, it'll be the entire Holy Trinity, not just the Virgin Mary.
The Lorena Bobbitt is back in the news again. If you don't know that name, you will. And, hey, amazingly enough, I have a story about myself and Lorena
Bobbitt. Son of a gun. More surgery?
That is so wrong. Do you know who Lorena Bobbitt is, Andrew?
No.
Okay, just checking. Did you know who she was before you read this story, Jacob?
The name was familiar. I didn't know all the ins and outs.
Okay.
Now I do.
All right. All the ins and outs. I would have thought of it better.
I think that
one
was intentional. Hippity dippity.
Right back. Alrighty, it's Tom and Curly Show, Laura's Home Loans. Laura Keel has got a great group of people working with her. 833-ASK-LAURA. If you have any questions about mortgages, it's Laura's Home Loans, 833-ASK-LAURA. I have a complaint I'd like to lodge.
With whom?
With anyone that's listening.
Okay.
It's hot in here, and it feels and it smells like we've just stepped into an airplane that has just taken people from New York to L.A. And now it's going to do the turnaround and take people from L.A. back to New York. It's got that kind of stale, stinky, hot air in here.
The morning crew has a 4-hour shift in this very spot. I'm sure they came on in under duress because of the snow. And these are the consequences.
But it's hot in here.
No, I know, and it'll be cold in about a half an hour. You know how it's been all week, John, up and down.
Okay, well, I'm just lodging a complaint if anybody cared. But seriously, Tom, it's uncomfortably muggy.
And I suppose you want hot breakfasts, too.
Well, I haven't committed any crimes that caused me to lose my freedom and lose my ability to have scrambled eggs.
You just haven't been caught.
True that. It was June 23rd, 1993. I remember it well. Oh, quiet. I was working in Washington, D.C. at a plucky little upstart cable news operation called News Channel 8. We were just outside of D.C. in Springfield, Virginia. We did 24-hour news time on a local basis. It was painful and it was horrible. But on one particular time, while sitting on the set, we got news that a friend of a friend who was a police officer had found a male penis on the side of the road and had taken it to a local 7-Eleven and stuck that penis, severed, in a aluminum bag where you would keep a hot dog.
I was gonna say,
he put ice in there from the Slurpee machine and then took it to the hospital. And then all they had to do was find the guy that was missing it.
And you're trying not to use the word wiener.
Well, I'll say this. News Channel 8 was the first station, and we were, I mean, no one was like to get it because someone, I think of the guy who was working in the back and in the graphic or Chiron department, his brother was a cop who knew the guy that found the thing on the side of the road.
Wow.
Driving another. So she, Lorena Bobbitt, took it from her husband, was in a sort of weird state where apparently her defense was that she was temporarily insane.
Right.
And she took the thing as she was driving down the road, she and threw just, it out the window.
Yeah.
Okay.
Out in a field, and the fact, I mean, it is the details of the story are pretty amazing, even 30, 40 years later.
Yeah.
They are pretty shocking. And the fact that she not only did what she did, cut off her husband's penis, but also then take it, drive down the road, and then tuck it out, and then the police did this massive search,
right?
Found hands and knees, find it, take it apparently to a 7-Eleven. You added that 7-Eleven detail, put it in a hot dog package.
Yeah, don't say hot dog, Tom.
And then... You prefer
a penis transport bag.
And then it was reattached to the said husband the same night.
Right.
It really is a spectacular tabloidy kind of story.
Yes.
And yet.
And now Lorena Bobbitt is Prime, Amazon Prime is releasing a trailer about the documentary series all about Lorena.
This was a modern love story. Boy meets girl. Boy falls in love with girl. Boy marries girl. Girl cuts off boy's penis.
The interest level was huge.
Court TV is bringing the proceedings into millions of homes.
People were like, that's crazy.
This story was irresistible.
Everybody was looking to get an interview.
There is a battle of the sexes. What it meant in 1993 is not that different from what it means today.
We were being entertained on the fodder of someone else's suffering. It's still going on.
I didn't choose to be in the spotlight. But there's no going back.
Okay. Boy doesn't just meet. Boy has a drinking problem. Boy is abusive. Boy does drugs. Woman speaks little or no English.
She's an immigrant, yes.
She's an immigrant.
24 years old at the time.
They got all sorts of problems, right? And as the story that she tells in court is that he raped her.
Yes.
She was really angry. She went into the kitchen. She was crying. She sort of, I think this disassociation something or other syndrome where you don't really know what you're doing. She saw the knife and then went in there and did that to him, right?
He was charged with marital rape. They both had highly publicized cases, and they both were acquitted, as a matter of fact. But the significance, I think it is, there's got to be some irony involved here. Somebody has a sick sense of humor that this four-part series about Lorena Bobbitt.
Uncut?
Premieres the day after Valentine's Day. It's sort of a warning. It starts, it's going to be available February 15th. But the idea now is that all the attention was focused on her outrageous act, and very little attention, relatively speaking, was given to the reason why she did what she did.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic abuse, domestic violence is much more understood and accepted as a real and serious thing. And they say in the intervening 30, 40 years that now we are ripe for understanding Lorena Bobbitt's side of the story more efficiently. By the way, they did mention that a number of the people that covered the story at the time.
Yeah. Did they mention us at News Channel 8?
No, they didn't. Oh, but that's a good thing because these are the people that made the honor roll of notable men who did cover the case.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, and Geraldo Rivera. So it's like they thought that the focus, it was very man-focused. Men reacted so strongly to this idea of their penis getting cut off that the women's experience of being raped on a regular basis and being beaten up and all didn't have the kind of social resonance that it does now. Or might now.
Right. The fact that it was made a joke, right?
The
punchline that she maimed this guy, the punchline that it ends up she does this to this guy because she herself was abused. It made the whole thing kind of a yuck.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need to talk about the fact that she said she'd been raped prior to cutting off. It's just the fact, well, look out.
Yes.
I mean, I saw her on there with, what's the guy's name from Family Feud? What's that? The horrible, horribly
Dawkins?
Not. What's his name? No.
Richard Dawkins?
The big black guy who's not funny. What's his name?
Steve
Harvey. Yeah. She was on Steve Harvey's
new
show.
One. Okay.
And the audience, when he says, so then you
still
cut
laughing
him off the thing. The female wants give a standing ovation to the guy, to her,
laughing. Yeah.
And then Steve Harvey acted like he was going to try to say something funny, but he couldn't think of anything funny to say. So she was on The View, and she talked about why she's coming forward after all these years.
25 years ago, my story got lost in the tabloids, and it was just basically a big joke. And there's not a joke about domestic violence. There's nothing a joke about sexual assault, and that's why I'm here. And also, I am here because I believe that there's no one day that passes by that I see in the newspaper that a woman gets raped, a woman is assaulted, a woman has gone through domestic violence. There's nothing has been done about it. Mm-hmm. And as a mother, I have a child, and eventually she's going to go to college. And I want my child to feel safe. I want my child to take a stand and say, this is no, I'm not going to take this anymore. And law needs to be changed. And the conversations about domestic violence have to be taken more seriously.
Here's a question. If she had killed him, she would stand charges for murder, but then they would be able to say she was this dissociate syndrome.
Yeah.
She'd be able to, she was under such duress. She wasn't she had planned it, but yet because of the abuse, it had put her in such a state that she was really not responsible for her actions.
Well, the plan, she claimed, even in trial, that it was never planned. She had just been raped. She goes into the bathroom, I forget now, for whatever, and then she sees a knife and decides to grab the knife.
Yeah.
So it's the idea is that it came to her spontaneously. Putting that aside, there have been countless cases, and some women are in prison. They shoot their husband.
Right.
They kill their husband, and they're in prison for a long time for manslaughter, you know, if not premeditated murder. So it all depends on the issues in this case, the issues in a particular case. I do think now, societally, we are more open to this notion of domestic violence. And it can go both ways, but usually it's the man.
It was interesting because if you read the transcripts from the trial and the cross-examination to her, they would never be able to get away with what they were asking her today with what they were asking then.
Like what?
Well, this is the very simple one, which is, if it was so terrible, why didn't you leave? Well, people now understand through science and research and through personal stories that a lot of women that are abused by guys don't have that option.
Yeah.
Or they just assume it won't be as bad next time. Or I won't do something wrong and upset him. Or I'll look for signals that he's giving me that a beating is coming and I'll try to avert that somehow. So they were asking questions like, aren't you responsible for your own actions? Shouldn't you have done something? Why didn't you leave?
Yeah.
Well, here's a woman who speaks very little English.
Yes.
She's from Venezuela or something like that.
Yeah,
or Honduras.
Yeah.
Very little English. She's stuck in there with this guy. He's drunk and high. Sometimes he loved her. Sometimes he beat her, right?
Yeah.
So if it's really interesting, boy, how far we have come in the last 20 or 30 years.
I think that's very true. And one of the reasons she said now, one of the most painful things about the documentary for her was to watch her on trial. She's this 24-year-old who just, she said, I was so fragile. I feel like I need to mother that child, that woman that I used to be. Now she's 49 years old. She's married. She has a 13-year-old daughter. She's much more mature. Now she feels like she can handle that. And
John Wayne Bobbitt went on to do porn.
That's right. But he also, apparently, according to this article, he had two convictions for violence against women, too. So some things haven't changed.
Come back. Don't forget, News Channel 8 was the first story to break it.
And don't forget, day after Valentine's Day, 4-part documentary.
Uncut, by the way. We'll be right back. Online Trading Academy text line 98973. Great way to get to us, since there's no other way to get to us. I think the email is down now.
Still.
The heat has caused the servers to crash.
I think it's the variation. It's the cold outside, the heat inside. That's doesn't allow for emails to get
our own weather in here. Email not coming in. Where are we on that? That's a big part of the
show. They're working on it.
Come on in through the text. That's the Online Trading Academy text line. Maybe the Online Trading Academy took down the email. They've got that kind of power. They've got a patented system since 1977. All right, let's see. The Oregon man who got locked in the bathroom. And he described the bathroom at Burger King as a place you don't want to spend much time in.
As the kind
of hold your breath, you get in and get out as fast as you can.
Well, I've been in those kind of bathrooms. I think we all have.
Right after Brock Huard.
At least Brock gives us fair warning. I wouldn't go in there for the next 15 minutes. The bathroom habits of Brock Huard.
Let me say this.
Yes.
There's a thing called a courtesy flush. Do you know what that is?
No. Beforehand or afterwards?
Flush. No. So let's say you're sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
Right? You
Oh, go. Yeah, I see.
And then
see.
Immediately flush.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
oh,
that's called a courtesy flush.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then if you need to sort of do a, not, bang, you hit it again.
Yes.
So you're just constantly working through the flushes. You might go 6-7 courtesy flushes.
Wow.
But I've actually learned it when
courteous.
I was, no, I was like 15 years old. I remember this guy, and I was in a stall. I wasn't going to the bathroom. Some other guy yelled out, hey, how about a courtesy flush over there?
Wow.
And I asked my dad, what's a courtesy flush? My dad explained it. Okay. So this guy goes into this bathroom. He gets locked in there for how long?
Hours.
I thought it was an hour.
No. I think it's hours.
At one point, he's knocking on the door. He looks at his receipt. A smart guy looks at his receipt.
Yeah.
And he calls the phone number saying, hey, I'm trapped in the bathroom.
That's right. And so they immediately rush in, the staff does, and they can't get him out. They cannot figure out. They give him a fly swatter. They give him a credit card. They try to get him to see if he can unlock it from the inside because they can't get it from the outside. They eventually end up calling a locksmith, but he had been in there for a long time. Maybe it was only an hour, but it felt like hours, John.
Right.
And they were quite apologetic. He said, oh, my God, that was terrible. Burger King says, you know what? You, the manager, just at the store, and I'm sure it was, he didn't clear it with, you know, upper management. He just says, hey, listen, you know, you can eat here free for the rest of your life. We are so sorry. And so the guy said, hey, sweet. And he showed up for the next 13 straight days for his free food, at which point, I don't know if it was the same manager, said, hey, you know that offer we made? Yeah, I think we're good. And he says, what?
Uh-huh.
And decides to take him to court.
I think what happened was he did go in there for 13 days, and one of the people who's working the line said, hey, that guy keeps coming in, and he's getting more and more, ordering more and more. I bet he continued to, like, increase. Why not? He's not paying for it. Hey, give me one of those pies. How's that fish sandwich, right? So here he is. He's ordering, maybe even brought a friend in there. I think he abused it. Then they told him, that's it, that's all. So he gets an attorney, and the attorneys, they end up suing. The guy says he determined the value of his reparation was going to be if he ate a Burger King.
It was a mere $9,000. If he ate a Whopper once a week for the rest of his life, he figured the average age for a man is
72.
And so he decided that would be about $9,000 worth. Now, that seems low. Mm-hmm. And I think Burger King was smart to say, yeah, you know what? Okay, good. We'll give you $9,000. Today, the news story is that they went ahead and settled for the $9,000 because I think Burger King's getting off easy.
On that one?
Yeah, on this one. Because otherwise, I mean, he could have campaigned. In fact, when we first did the story, that $9,000, it could be $90,000. You can eat a lot at McDonald's over the course of a lifetime. So the fact that he limited himself to one big Whopper once a week for, 60 more years.
I'll say this. He knew that he did not have enough money to fight Burger King. Burger King would have dragged that thing out in court for years.
And they were complimented for not dragging it out.
Quick settlement.
It was a smart PR move on Burger King's. We're all going to go eat at Burger King's right now.
A fly swatter when you're trapped in the bathroom.